Figueroa waited for 49 minutes before Mortensen and his companion in overalls came out of Bellmansgarten 1. As they started up the hill towards her, she very steadily raised her Nikon, with its 300mm telephoto lens, and took 2 pictures. She put the camera in the space under her seat and was just about to fiddle with her map when she happened to glance towards the Maria lift. Her eyes opened wide. At the end of Upper Bellmansgarten, right next to the gate to the Maria lift, stood a dark-haired woman with a digital camera filming Mortensen and his companion. What the hell? Is there some sort of spy convention on Bellmansgarten today? The two men parted at the top of the hill without exchanging a word. Mortensen went back to his car on Tavastgarten. He pulled away from the curb and disappeared from view. Figueroa looked into her rear-view mirror, in which she could still see the back of the man in the blue overalls. She then saw that the woman with the camera had stopped filming and was heading past the Lorinska building in her direction. Heads or tails? She already knew who Mortensen was and what he was up to. The man in the blue overalls and the woman with a camera were unknown entities. But if she left her car, she risked being seen by the woman. She sat still. In her rearview mirror, she saw the man in the blue overalls turn into Brennkirkegatan. She waited until the woman reached the crossing in front of her, but instead of following the man in the overalls, the woman turned 180 degrees and went down the steep hill towards Bellmansgarten 1. Figueroa guessed that she was in her mid-30s. She had short, dark hair and was dressed in dark jeans and a black jacket. As soon as she was a little way down the hill, Figueroa pushed open her car door and ran towards Brennkirkegatan. She could not see the blue overalls. The next second, a Toyota van pulled away from the curb. Figueroa saw the man in half profile and memorized the registration number, but if she got the registration wrong, she would be able to trace him anyway. The sides of the van advertised Lars Falsen Lock and Key Service, with a phone number. There was no need to follow the van. She walked calmly back to the top of the hill, just in time to see the woman disappear through the door of Blomqvist's building. She got back into her car and wrote down both the registration and phone numbers for Lars Falsen. There was a lot of mysterious traffic around Blomqvist's address that morning. She looked up towards the roof of Bellmansgarten 1. She knew that Blomqvist's apartment was on the top floor, but from the blueprints from the city construction office, she knew that it was on the other side of the building, with dormer windows looking out on Gamlestan and the waters of Riddarfjärden. An exclusive address in a fine old cultural quarter. She wondered whether he was an ostentatious nouveau riche. 10 minutes later, the woman with the camera came out of the building again. Instead of going back up the hill to Tavastgarten, she continued down the hill and turned right at the corner of Prisgrend. If she had a car parked down on Prisgrend, Figueroa was out of luck. But if she was walking, there was only one way out of the dead end, up to Brennkirkegatan via Pustegrend and towards Slusen. Figueroa decided to leave her car behind and turned left in the direction of Slusen on Brennkirkegatan. She had almost reached Pustegrend when the woman appeared, coming up towards her. Bingo. She followed her past the Hilton on Södermalmstorg and past the Staatsmuseum at Slusen. The woman walked quickly and purposefully, without once looking around. Figueroa gave her a lead of about 30 yards. When she went into Slusen Tunnelbana, Figueroa picked up her pace, but stopped when she saw the woman head for the Pressbyrån kiosk instead of through the turnstiles. She watched the woman as she stood in line at the kiosk. She was about 5'7" and looked to be in pretty good shape. She was wearing running shoes. Seeing her with both feet planted firmly as she stood by the window of the kiosk, Figueroa suddenly had the feeling that she was a policewoman. She bought a tin of catch-dry snuff and went back out onto Södermalmstorg and turned right across Katarinavägen. Figueroa followed. She was almost certain the woman had not seen her. The woman turned the corner at McDonald's and Figueroa hurried after her, but when she got to the corner the woman had vanished without a trace. Figueroa stopped short in consternation. Shit. She walked slowly past the entrances to the buildings. Then she caught sight of a brass plate that read, Milton Security. Figueroa walked back to Bellmansgarten. She drove to Guttgarten, where the offices of Millennium were, and spent the next half hour walking around the streets in the area. She did not see Mortensen's car. At lunchtime she returned to police headquarters in Kungsholmen and spent 2 hours thinking, as she pumped iron in the gym. "We have a problem," Cortez said. Erickson and Blomqvist looked up from the manuscript of the book about the Zalachenko case. It was 1:30 in the afternoon.
"Take a seat," Erickson said.
"It's about Vitivara, Inc., the company that makes the 1700 Kronor toilets in Vietnam."
"What's the problem?" Blomqvist said.
"Vitivara, Inc. is a wholly owned subsidiary of Svea Construction, Inc."
"I see. That's a very large firm."
"Yes, it is. The chairman of the board is Magnus Borgshaw, a professional board member. He's also the CEO of Svenska Morgonposten and owns about 10% of it."
Blomqvist gave Cortez a sharp look. "Are you sure?"
"Yep. Berger's boss is a fucking crook, a man who exploits child labour in Vietnam.